You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
I'm Casey Bartley.
And we are here back in your ears once again, early Monday morning. This should go up. We've got a couple exciting topics to go over. First, Matt Painter has finished filling out his 2021-2022 coaching staff with the hiring of Terry Johnson. We're going to give you a rundown on what to expect from him and kind of his history in the sport. Then we're going to talk about the unfortunate loss, the women's volleyball team. They were defeated by Kentucky. You'll remember we talked about that on our last episode. And then we're going to transition into what team we think might win the next national title for Purdue. We're going to do a brief talk about the NFL draft, what to expect from Purdue's players that are heading in there. And then finally, we're going to end with a recommendation again this week. Last week, you'll remember we discussed Ted Lasso. That was a joint recommendation. So this week, we're going to do our first one where it's just one of us. And I will be taking the reins on this one this week. So I will be doing the recommendation. And I have not told Casey what it was. Other than it's going to be a book, and he does not know what it is. So,
shockingly, that didn't limit it down to what I could pick.
No, yeah. So it could be anything. So we'll see.
I'm crossing my fingers for Madame Bovary.
Yes. Dang it. Now I gotta come up with a new one in the next 20-25 minutes. All right. So first on the docket, as I said, Matt Painter has finished filling his 2021-2022 coaching staff with Terry Johnson, who was previously one of the assistant coaches at Ohio State under Holtman. So, I mean, he was with them this very past season. So he'll be the second coach actually in the conference to switch from one team to another as an assistant to go along with Dane Fife, who went from Michigan State under Tom Izzo back to his alma mater at IU. So,
hey, Ledman?
Yeah.
Guess who Johnson was an assistant to at IPFW in 06-07?
Is that Dane Fife, seriously?
It was Dane Fife!
Wow.
Fun fact for you!
I was like, the only person who I know has coached at IPFW is Dane Fife. So that obviously that had to be the answer. I didn't even know that. So Terry Johnson, like I said, he was on Ohio State last season, one of their assistants. But probably the thing that excites about most people about him the most is that he did kind of come up under Brad Stevens. And, you know, anytime you can get a name like Brad Stevens on your resume as an assistant coach, you're going to get a lot of looks. And Johnson was at Butler under three different head coaches, maintained, you know, being on the staff under Stevens. What did we say the second guy was? Miller?
Yes.
Yeah, and then he obviously wasn't there very long. He had those health issues. He had to step back, and then stayed in the job under Holtman. And then when Holtman came to Ohio State, he brought Coach Johnson with him. So I think that says a lot about the kind of guy he is. You know, when you stay on staff through multiple coaches, that is a good sign. It says you've got value. And then when a coach moves from granted, Butler's a hell of a job, and that's when they were at their prime. When Johnson was there, but you know, they're not always going to be that way, as you've seen in recent years. So when you can go from a school like Butler to a Big Ten school, and the coach is going to bring you with them, that says a lot about what you bring to a program. So to me, this seems like a great hire. I don't know what your first impressions are though, Casey.
First of all, yes, there's a lot more money at Ohio State than there is Butler.
Yeah, that's that's undisputed, I think.
Just generally, there's no comparison between playing basketball at Hinkle or the worst campus in the Big Ten, but
you think Ohio State's the worst campus? Not campus,
it's the worst basketball atmosphere,
okay.
Hands down.
Okay.
Yeah. The basketball arena, the fans, everything just,
Value pretty, City, baby!
Pretty embarrassing. Yeah, it's the Big Lots of the Big Ten. but I like Terry Johnson. At Ohio State, when he first came on, he's like a 5'8 guy. He played guard, pretty small. So I was reading a story over the weekend how when he came over and Caleb Wesson, when he was approached about having Terry Johnson come in and be the big man's coach, he's like, he's tiny. I don't understand.
Listen, as someone who's 5'6", I have to stick up for Terry Johnson here. You know, just because you're not tall doesn't mean you can't tell tall people what to do. So I got to stick up for Coach Johnson there.
Well, yeah, and Terry's response was like, yeah, I've been a big man at heart my whole life. And honestly, when you are on a court, like, you see little guys and they, like, have way better post moves than big guys because they need it.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, it makes sense, like, footwork. Obviously, Purdue doesn't really need a defense or a big man specialist. We have Brantley there who's as good as anyone in the country.
Yeah, but I mean, you just look at the last 5-6 years. I mean, he's done a hell of a job.
Yeah, but as we saw in the NCAA tournament, we could use some help on the defensive end, and that's what Terry Johnson's been doing for Ohio State. You know, Ohio State has had a lot of long wings, a lot of guards. They play good defense. They're tough. They switch, and after what happened against North Texas, we could definitely use a little bit of shakeup all year, really. Our perimeter defense really struggled to – I'm not even going to say we struggled to contain drivers, but our defense acted like a dribble was the biggest threat in the world, and our guards would overhelp constantly, and it would be really nice if we could not do that again.
Yeah, at times we kind of looked like if you've ever seen like 7-year-olds play soccer, It's like, oh, the ball's over there. Everybody run to it. You know, we just like, and then suddenly there's three other guys on the other side that are wide open and you're like, oh crap, how did that even happen? It's like, oh, you all ran toward the ball and you didn't need to.
Yeah. If we can scheme something up to where opposing teams aren't easily able to take advantage of one like minus defender on the court, that would really help. Cause it'd be nice if our best shooter could play more. And Sasha's been played off of multiple NCAA tournament runs at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, Sasha is a guy you have to have on the court for his offense. And when you take him off the court on the offensive end, our team changes. So you need to find a way to cover him up or mask his deficiencies on defense. And if you can't do that, then you can't leave him on the floor because what he brings on offense will not make up for what he gives up on defense. Yeah.
But I will say, big picture, looking at this hire, taking another proven assistant coach, a young up-and-comer who, you know, he is, like, on the precipice of getting his own program. We just watched two of Painter's assistants get a major Big Ten coaching in Shrew, and then...
Well, I mean, it's Penn State basketball, so let's not
That's a Big Ten school, Ledman.
Yeah, but it's not
That's a very big school with a very big athletic budget.
Not a major Big Ten job.
There's only 12 of them.
There's actually more than 12 of them there, champ. Do you even know how many
teams are we at 14 now? God damn it.
Now? Yeah. In years.
What? We're counting? Yeah.
We do count Maryland still.
Yeah. Okay, 14. That's not many.
We're keeping that in, by the way.
Yeah, that's fine. I am. But regardless of that, the thing is that Matt Painter is showing himself that his staff working under him is a gateway to coaching opportunities elsewhere as a head coach. And that is very important when you're trying to get the best coaches in. Also, players recognize this. If this is a place assistant coaches want to be, it's where recruiters are going to end up, and it's where recruits are going to end up. So it is a positive sign that Painter can take someone from Ohio State.
Yeah. Yeah.
From Creighton, like Paul Lusk. These are big name coaches. He's not going to have to babysit them, and he can trust them to, you know, run the offense, run the defense, recruit. And it's only upside that Painter's name continues to be this gold.
Yeah, yeah. And to kind of build on that, I think, you know, when you're talking about recruiting, you're looking at, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, however old they may be, who are out there getting recruited. They may not know all these things, but you know who does are the people who are shepherding them through the process, whether that be an AAU coach, a high school coach, a parent. They can look around and see what's going on at these universities and see, you know, this guy has had assistant coaches go to other programs with head gigs, and that matters. So just to give a little more background on Johnson, for those who did not read my superbly written article kind of giving his history, he was born in West Virginia, but actually played high school ball in Indiana. He played at Anderson. He wound up at a couple of small schools. He played at Lincoln Trail Community College, which I had never heard of. That is in Illinois. He then played at Lamar University, which is in Texas, and then finally wound up at IPFW playing. And what I found interesting is immediately after graduating at IPFW, they hired him on as an assistant coach.
Yeah, some players play to play. Everyone loves to play, but there are kids that know their coaches from the time they're 10 years old.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you love the game, but you know your talent and your work ethic and everything else can only get you so far. You know, you can wring every ounce of talent out of your body, but, you know, if that only gets you to a 6 out of 10, you know, you're not going to go very far. So it looks like that's kind of Johnson's situation. I mean, he put his heart and soul into playing the game, but as soon as it was over, he realized, I want to stay in the game. And they put him on as an assistant coach. So, I mean, that, again, it just speaks to kind of he's a guy you want around your players to go right from being a player to being an assistant coach. You got to have a lot of trust in a guy like that.
Yeah, and new voices in a locker room is not a terrible thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because, I mean, Lusk, he has been at Purdue before. He was with Purdue right when Painter came over, so – him and Painter have a good working relationship. They know each other. They're friendly on and off the court. You know, even when Lusk was gone, you know, it's not like there was ill feelings. Lusk went and got himself a head coaching job, and now he's back as an assistant. So those two are going to work well together. We know that. But just to get a high-level assistant like Johnson onto the staff with a different set of ideas, maybe a different way of looking at things is always going to be good. You know, you want that new blood to come in and give you a second set of eyes on problems that maybe you think you've solved, or problems that you don't even think you have, that he might be able to see.
Well said.
So any final thoughts on Coach Johnson before we move on?
Nope. I think okay. That about covers it.
All right. I do want to say one thing that I failed to mention there. We mentioned last time, I think, or else it's on the site. You know, we write everything on the site. Go to hammerandrails.com. It's all there. Paul Lusk, he was hired as the kind of defensive coordinator role that Painter's been splitting his staff into, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. So the thinking going into this hiring was that it was going to be an offensive-minded coach who was hired. But Terry Johnson is kind of known as a defensive guy as well. He took on a similar defensive coordinator's role while he was at Butler. So I think, to me, this signals that Terry Johnson was the best coach Painter could find. Yep. He didn't constrain himself to, I have to find an offensive coach. I'm going to look for who is the best available. It's like when you're in the NFL draft and you're like, okay, we need a quarterback. But then by the time you get to your spot, you don't like the quarterback that's available. So you take the best guy on the board. So that's what Painter did. Painter took the best guy on the board, regardless of position, and he's going to find a way to make it work because these guys coach offense, defense, everything. It's not like Johnson doesn't know how to play offense, so he should be just fine. I'm not worried about that one bit.
Yeah, you know who else said all that? Coach Painter.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I'm never going to go out and look for somebody who helps us from an offensive standpoint, and then that's the only criteria. I handcuff myself. But I think being patient and trying to find the right guy is more important than getting the right guy from a schematic standpoint. But well, I am looking for both.
Well, there you go. I like to think I'm very wise, and to hear Painter basically say what I said is, you know, it's good. It makes me feel good about myself. So.
You sound two inches taller, Ledman.
If only. If only. So as we talked about last week on the podcast, the Purdue women's volleyball team was in the Elite Eight heading to play Kentucky for a shot at the Final Four. Unfortunately, they were defeated 3-0. So Kentucky actually wound up moving on. They won the whole dang thing. So Purdue lost to the champions, which is always some consolation, but you don't want that consolation. You know, you want to be the damn winner. So it's unfortunate. You know, this is at least the second time that this team, this women's volleyball team, has been to the Elite Eight, and the second time they've lost. Previously, I believe it was against Texas a few years back. So we've been to the Elite Eight twice, haven't quite got over that hump. So it stinks to see it, but given the strangeness of this year and what the team has put together and who they have coming back, they should be very good again next year.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, Coach Hondell, we talked a little bit on it last week. Just runs a really good program, has had his hand in it for long enough that you know each year is going to be good. And it's a pretty young team, and the future is very bright, and it's super exciting to see them have this much success this year and then see what they can do again next year, hopefully with full arenas again and that whole experience paying off.
Yeah. Yeah. And for anybody who knows anything about college volleyball, you know that the Big Ten is absolutely stacked each and every year. So they're going to be playing top competition, and they're going to be able to prove themselves each and every week against such a great conference. So that should put them, you know, if they can handle their business, it'll put them again in a pretty great spot come NCAA tournament time. And hopefully they can find themselves in a similar position next year and get over that hump. So speaking of getting over the hump and finding a way to win, we know that Purdue is not known for national titles. It's just the way it is. We don't have a ton of them, but we'd like to have more. Mm-hmm. You know, we're always looking. So if anybody knows what we can do short of, you know, illegal recruiting, please let us know. Please put your note in the comments. So we wanted to kind of chat with one another and see who do we think of all the teams out there that Purdue has, who do we think is going to be the next one to get that national title? So, Casey, I will let you go first and see what your thoughts are. And I may agree with you. I don't know. We haven't discussed this previously.
What was your gut reaction? Like, not your final answer.
My gut reaction was women's volleyball.
Okay. Do you think that's recency bias or just because they've been so close?
I think it's just because they've been so close and that they have some of the best teams Purdue's had of any sport in recent memory.
Now, our last national title was cheerleading.
Yeah, 2018, the cheerleaders won the national title.
And then our women's golf team won one.
Correct.
And then I believe our men's team won one?
Men's golf?
I think so.
I don't think so.
Well, regardless.
Well, and of course, the women's basketball team.
Yeah, that was a little further back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the only national titles I have recognition of is a women's winning. So my gut reaction was basketball, just because I think our team next year is going to be really good.
Yeah.
But it seems silly not to just say volleyball, right?
I think so.
The only problem is that volleyball seems to be a little bit like women's basketball, where like there's like two or three programs that are just always insane. Like that Kentucky team was dynamic.
Yeah, they were incredible. Men's golf apparently won the national title in 1961.
Okay, that was a long time away. That's not what I meant. Remember.
Yeah, I didn't figure that's what you were talking about.
I think they have a runners up. They have some men's thing noted when you drive into Ackerman.
It could have been Maria Hernandez, because she won the individual title in 2009. And I mean, we've got Purdue has a lot of individual national titles, specifically in diving. I mean, Purdue has one of the best diving programs in the country.
Ooh.
But we don't, you know, there's no diving national title. Like, it's swimming and diving. So you have to put together a good diving squad and a good group of swimmers. And Purdue hasn't been able to throw together a group of swimmers who can, you know, join together with their divers.
We can just both agree it's not football, right?
Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah, I'm going to say women's volleyball. Shondell deserves it. That would be really great to see.
And the only problem I have saying either men's basketball or volleyball is just the random nature of tournaments. You know, I know this is Drew's big thing on the site and in the group chat is always, this is a terrible way to pick a national title winner. This is a terrible way to see who's the best team. And he makes a good point, but, you know, unfortunately that's just how it is. You know, it's not like we can play a best of five series each round in the NCAA tournament to truly see who the best team is. It's you've got to bring your best game each and every day, and you've got to win or you've got to go home.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think it'd be fair to do best of three, best of five, because college basketball already struggles from teams breaking into the championship.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you turn it to a series, like...
Yeah, I mean, it would no longer really truly be March Madness at that point. The outcomes would be so much more preordained.
So yeah, I think my final answer is going to be volleyball, even though I think our basketball team will get close next year.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to choose any one program, but I think if I'm forced to, I will choose women's volleyball, because I think the consistency they've shown and the fact that they've gotten to the Elite Eight twice, and they're just so close to getting there. So that is where I would put my money.
Grace Cleveland. We watched.
Yeah, she's a hell of a player.
She, anytime you can root for someone like breaking someone's face in a way that's not like I'm sure that girl's fine, but yeah. Like,
well, yeah, and just, there was nothing malicious about no, it. It's not just like she was going after her face.
Yeah, no, it was just like, oh, that looked like it hurt. And then, like, 30 seconds later, the announcer's like, oh, she's bleeding.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine trying to get in front of a ball Mm-mm. like that. Nope. Nope. Not for me. Mm-mm. More power to you if you can.
All right, so 2022 Women's Volleyball Champions. You heard it here
first.
There
we go. Yep, you heard it here. All right, so now we got one last topic, and that's going to be the NFL draft, which is coming up in, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks?
No, Ledman, it's coming up this Thursday. ESPN!
Oh, it's on. Is it on ESPN?
Oh, yeah, it's like a three-day event now.
I know, I was kidding. Yeah, okay, so it's Thursday. It's April 29th. Starts at 8 p.m.
Yep.
So the question is, well, it's a couple questions. Do we think Purdue's going to have a player drafted on day one?
No.
You're going to go with no?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the only one that could break in would be Rondell Moore. It is a particularly deep wide receiver class. He is somewhere, depending on who you talk to, 4 to 7 or 8. There's a couple guys that are pretty much the small, quick, athletic slot receivers, yak receivers, that profile the same way he does. All the talk I've been hearing is he is more likely to be the 5th or 6th receiver off the board, and that probably pushes him to early to mid second round. This is a weird draft. We've got almost guaranteed 4 QBs to go off the board early. They've got a lot of offensive line talent in this draft, so I'm guessing that we won't hear his name called until Friday night.
I'm going to disagree. I think he'll go in the first round.
What? How early?
Oh, I mean, it'll be later in the first round. I mean, he'll be toward the bottom, I think, of the first round. But to me, the amount of talent that guy has...
How about the amount of injury?
Yeah, but he's so young...
I get it. This is another 5'8 thing.
Yep, this is all about height. You know, gotcha. I don't know if you know this. If you're under 5'9", mm-hmm. and
you eat at Denny's free, right?
Dude, you're not supposed to tell people.
Oh, okay.
No, if you're under 5'9", you have to sign a pledge to defend athletes who are also under 5'9".
Gotcha.
So... I've signed the pledge. Gotcha. I have it on. I have a laminated copy in my wallet. I carry it around. I just think the man is too damn talented to get all the way through the first round. I think so many coaches out there with offensive minds are looking at a guy like him and just imagining the things they can do with him. They can run him out of so many positions, so many different sets, so many formations. And he really can. I mean, he just makes people miss. And you just saw the way he played against an Ohio State team that was filled with future NFL players. And what he did to those guys. It's hard to imagine to me that he's going to get to the second round.
Okay.
Like I said, I do think it's going to be late first round. But I think he'll be off the board on day one.
I think it's fair to say that if... You have someone that looks at just his freshman tape and goes, all right, he had one injury that held him out for his second year. If you ignore that and just look at the freshman season, what he did was pretty incredible. I think that would have to be the way you talk yourself into it. I wish his hands were a little better. You know, there were a few drops downfield that concerns me. His size concerns me a little bit. And you don't like
but
injuries.
There are a lot of, you know, smaller-ish wide receivers in the NFL over the last 5 to 10 years who, you know, you look at what New England has done with insert wide receiver name here who's only
they haven't
like
had
five,
a good receiver
five,
in like 5 years.
I mean, Julian Edelman would like to speak with you.
Yeah, he was pretty garbage the last few years.
Well, he was injured. That was, and then he retired. That was the end of his career.
Yeah, because little guys get injured quicker, Ledman.
Okay, but what do they do? You know, would you take Julian Edelman's career?
No, he wasn't that good.
Oh, come on.
He doesn't even come close to the Hall of Fame. What?
I'm sorry. Is it you're trash or you're in the Hall of Fame? Are those the only two options?
Yeah, but I'm just saying he wouldn't be a first-round pick. If you could get his career out of a wide receiver, he would not go in the first round.
I don't know.
Not having it.
All right, well.
If he was that good, the Bucs would have traded for him.
I mean, Brady could have probably just told him to somehow retire and that he'd wind up on the Bucs anyway.
It's probably what's going to happen.
That I made that joke on Twitter, thank you very much.
We're just waiting for Godwin to break another pinky.
Right. I mean, listen, Edelman had 3 seasons over 1,000 yards, and then one at 972 yards receiving. So those are some good seasons right there.
Yeah, they're fine.
Okay, well, now you're just being a dick to be a dick. So, all right. Any other Purdue players you actually think will be drafted? I know we've got prospects, but anybody you actually think is going to hear their name called and not, you know, signed as a free agent the next day or 2 hours after the draft is over?
I would be shocked if Derek Barnes is not drafted by the 4th round. I'm legitimately shocked.
Why do you say the 4th round? Just based on the number of linebackers ahead of him on these rankings, or do you have a team in mind who you think needs him?
No, I just think his talent, I mean, we watched Bailey get drafted last year. Barnes, to me, looks like a little faster version of him. I think he has a defined trait that he's really good in coverage. He's really athletic. His closeout speed was pretty much the only thing that saved Purdue's defense for most of the season last year. He really stands out on tape. And Purdue has a long history of linebackers getting chosen in that middle rounds. A lot of them chosen by Belichick. He seems like a guy that's never going to make top money, never going to make a Pro Bowl, but he's going to be in the league 7 to 10 years because he can do everything like pretty well. He should be a decent blitzer. He's got great closing speed and he should be able to cover receivers. So
I buy that. That makes sense to me, especially the comparison to Bailey.
Yeah. So I would look at teams, you know, Seattle's got some older defenders they need to cover. I would look for the Seahawks towards him. The Niners love speed on defense. They're going to have some holes to plug. And then, like I said, Belichick has made taken quite a few Purdue defenders, and it's worked out well for him. I would be really shocked if he's not on a team by the 4th round.
Okay. All right. So the other real big name for Purdue who's going to be in the draft is Lorenzo Neal. So he, of course, had the injury problems. He came back to try to show NFL teams, hey, I can play. I'm not injured. I'm not injury prone. It was just an injury. I will be fine, and here's what I can do. Do you think he did enough in this last strange season as it was to find himself on the podium?
I don't think so.
With the third assistant commissioner on day 3 of the draft.
Yeah, everything I saw from him last year, nothing really stood out. Our defensive line besides Karloftis was kind of a wasteland. He's a big body and he takes up space, but he really didn't have that jolt of athleticism this year. He seems like someone that's going to go and need to be in someone's camp and show them that he can play. So he seems a lot like someone that's going to sign as a free agent and then maybe hopefully catch on somewhere.
I think I'm going to have to disagree with you again. I think he's going to be a guy who gets drafted in the later rounds toward the end of the draft.
Were you impressed last year by him?
I mean, he showed more last year, I think, than he had previously, because I think he knew this was his last chance. He is a big, strong man, and that is what you want out of a defensive lineman. And he comes from an NFL family, which they take that into account, whether they admit it or not. You know, somebody in a front office may know his dad, has played with his dad, you know, spread a good word. So stuff like that, we like to think it doesn't matter, but it probably does. And I just think he has shown how talented he can be. If he just has the motor with him 24/7, he can really caused some damage on the defensive line. So I think he's going to be who will get he's going to be a guy who will get drafted, but it's going to be late, and he's going to have to work in order to stay in the league, at least for the first couple seasons before he can prove himself.
I hope you're right. It's fun to see Boilermakers in the league. Grant Hermans, offensive lineman, might get drafted. It wouldn't shock me, but also wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy who will sign as a free agent.
Yeah, but I'm also every time a Purdue Boilermaker tests, I'm shocked by how athletic they are, because they never look that way on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, we do have some. Sometimes we get those workout warriors.
Yeah, I don't know what it's been like, especially during the Hazel years. It was just like, how did you make these players so unathletic on the field?
Oh, I know. Yeah, you just put them in a terrible position each and every game. And that's the strange thing about the transition from Hazel to Brohm. Brohm
hasn't gotten much better.
Well, hold on. Not going there right now. Brohm has had his best season with Hazel players who had terrible seasons. And then suddenly Brohm comes in and gets the most out of those players. Did he put them in a better position? Did he just know what he's doing more than Hazel? Probably yes on both of those accounts. But how do you get such vastly different results from the same players? I don't know.
Who's going to have the better NFL career, Rondell Moore or David Bell?
David Bell.
Yeah, he's so good.
Yeah, he's so consistent. And I do, like you said, with Rondale in his hands, I think Bell has better hands.
Yeah, Bell reminds me a little bit of Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And Bell, I think we might only have one more year of that guy.
Don't make me sad.
I know.
All right, well, the fun thing with Rondale, though, we talked about this a little bit. What team... Do you want to do it? What team we want him to get drafted by, or what team we think he'll get drafted by?
Probably what team we want him to get drafted by.
Yeah, I think that's
my. I mean that. Yeah. I'm looking up the draft order. I don't even know the draft order this year.
But you don't remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember that offhand.
What do you have going on in your life, Ledman? What could possibly be more important?
Let's see. An 11, almost 11-month-old child,
mm-hmm.
Trying to buy a house.
Uh huh.
So just a few things. All right, so a lot of teams, I think, could use Rondale Moore. And since I'm on the record saying as I think he's going to go in the first round, I mean, obviously, I'm a Bucs fan. I would love to see what he could do on the Buccaneers because, as far as I know, Antonio Brown is not back, thank goodness. So I would love to see... Rondale just kind of jump in as an extra wide receiver there.
But so gross.
I don't think that's going to happen. Honestly, I think a team that would be great to see him on is the team that's going to be drafting 29th, the Green Bay Packers.
Okay, so you think he'll go 29th. Okay, so Green Bay is definitely one of mine to look out for.
I just think he would fit in there, and to get Rodgers needs weapons on offense.
And they, I can't remember the guy's name, but they have Irwin. I think Irwin is like a running back slash wide receiver they tried to use in that capacity, where he runs routes but also lines up in the backfield, does a lot of jet sweep stuff. But he wasn't very good at it. And like Rondale Moore.
Do you mean Tyler Irvin?
Irvin, yes. Irwin's okay. Pretty close. A lot closer than Grover Cleveland.
Yes. Really, if you think about it, you're only half a letter off.
I'm German, Ledman, so it's a little racist, so you're correcting my W.
Ah, yes, I guess it could have been.
I feel like that's early for him, but I don't hate that. I like it for Rondale, and I like it for the Packers.
Yeah.
I do think there's... I forgot the Baltimore, you know, they traded... They got Kansas City's first-round draft pick.
Oh, yeah, they have.
So they're sitting there 31. Two spots behind at 31, and they need weapons.
Yeah.
He would not be a bad option either. But, so I guess who I want to see them go to, Green Bay, is the answer. but just to be a little different and...
Don't say the Colts.
I'm not going to say the Colts.
Thank you.
They've got so many young receivers. So I think he makes a lot of sense in Miami.
Really?
It's a young, up-and-coming... I think they need help at running back and receivers that can get open easily for Tua. And guys that can do stuff after the, like, you know, after the catch they've got. Devontae Parker is a go-up-and-catch-the-ball guy. Preston Williams is a tall guy. They're probably going to draft a receiver with their first pick, so that might be why they don't. But if Kyle Pitts is still on the board for them at 6, and they can get him, it would not shock me at all if they get another receiver that can play the slot for Tua.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to build around Tua. You got to give him weapons if you're going to, you know, get the most out of him as your star quarterback. So it makes sense.
New England picks at 46. If Rondell's still on the board, I would book that as well.
Yeah, I get that. Belichick loves those small, fast players. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there you have it, folks. There's some there's some possible landing spots for Rondale Moore. So we'll have to – I think we'll be watching on Thursday to find out. Casey seems to think it might be round 2, which is on Friday. So to wrap things up, we do like to end the show with a recommendation. It is my turn this week.
What's your recommendation, Ledman?
Well, it's a book. For asking. It is a book. So the way –
Hold on. When was it published? I want to guess what the book is.
Oh, I don't know. That was actually one of the things I was just getting ready to talk about. 2016.
It was published in 2016.
Yep.
Okay, I have no idea.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm using these recommendations not as necessarily like the hot new thing that comes out that you need to look into. These are just going to be things that maybe I found a little late, maybe I found recently. It doesn't matter. So just things that I think are really great and more people should look into. So the name of this book is Dark Matter, and it is by Blake Crouch. And I'm trying to figure out how I can explain it without giving anything away. Uh-huh. It's kind of, I guess you would call it a science fiction thriller, maybe like a suspense. So it's the story of a man who was a brilliant scientist, and then he met the woman of his dreams.
And not enough stories about non-brilliant scientists.
There's no, like, there's never a middling scientist in the book who's like, well, you know, things are fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll ever, you know, I'm good at it. I'm not great, and I know that. So he meets the woman of his dreams, and he's a heavy research scientist. He's into some crazy things related to, of course, as you might imagine.
Dark matter?
Dark matter, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. See, Casey, you're so smart. And in order to be with the woman of his dreams, he kind of pumps the brakes on his research. Ooh. And he
never give up the life for a woman.
And he takes a job as a professor.
And that goes double for women giving up their lives for men.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Women are at least worth it. Men suck.
Yeah, men are the worst. And we, you know, as two men, we can say that because we know men mm-hmm. and we are bad. So he gives up his research basically and teaches at basically more or less a middling college. And it's
IU?
Unfortunately, no. That would have been great though. The book is more or less about the path not taken. And that is all I will say.
Is this nonfiction?
Yes.
Or science fiction?
No, wait. Oh, nonfiction or science fiction? Those are not the only options. No, it is a fiction book. It is fiction.
Well, you said it was kind of science fiction-y, so I didn't...
Well, yeah.
Is this based off someone's life?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Because the science fiction does take over a little bit, but I mean, it's not like alien worlds and like a star space war or anything like that. I mean, it's not that kind of science fiction. So it, you know, there's only so much I can say without giving anything away, but it is one of the better books I've read in the last few years. So okay. I would highly recommend, again, the name of the book, Dark Matter by Blake Crouch, published in 2016. So you may have heard about it. You may have read it by now, but there are so many books published
There are a lot of books, Ledman.
So, yeah, you can't ever catch them all. So I would recommend going to your local library, go to your bookstore, go to your independent retailer, wherever you can find it. Take a look. It's a great one. So for Casey and for myself, I think that's a wrap on episode 2 of the Casey and Andrew Hammer and Rails podcast. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you're listening, you're liking, subscribe, comment, and hammer that subscribe button.
Barbecue sauce. Thank you.